This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know how everything seems like a good idea after you've had a few?
Downtown Railway Station!
Yeah, that's this show.
Riding in my car, and I'm listening to the radio.
It's time for Dukes and Bell.
Oh, someone told me it's the Black Beverly Hills. Is that true?
Driving in Atlanta just got a whole lot more bearable.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Hi, everybody. Carl Dukes and Mike Bell. The names mean goodness.
Say my name, you know who I am.
Carl Dukes.
I drink and I know things.
Oh, don't question my authority, things.
King Kong ain't got on me.
Sometimes you just gotta call somebody, and I'm not ashamed to say it. You know,
And Mike Bell.
I'm funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
Hope you guess my name.
Bring a pitcher of beer every 7 minutes till somebody passes out, and then bring one every 10 minutes, right?
Get ready for the best 5 hours of your life.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Don't believe me, just watch.
This is Dukes and Bell.
You know what? Why don't we start doing the stuff that other guys have done on other radio shows around the country?
No.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Atlanta, what's going on? It is Dukes and Bell on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We start off every day and every hour by saying, hey, man, happy Monday. Mike Bell, it's a little cold outside today, bro.
Yeah, I made that mistake of coming directly from the gym to the office today in shorts. And I like to think of myself as a hearty Northeasterner. I used to wear a kilt on St. Patrick's Day, and those days are gone, bro. I'm freezing my ass off walking to work today.
It was chilly, man. No doubt. Last night, they said that front was going to move in. They were like, when you wake up in the morning, it will be cold. Wind chilled in the 20s. And I went out this morning. Like, I always talk about taking the dogs out. And, you know, Max is looking at me like, whatever, I'm not going out there. But so make sure you're wrapped up appropriately today if you're out in this this chilly weather, man. We got a lot to get to, guys. And you know what? This is, in my opinion, coming off of one of the most exciting football weekends there is all season long. It, for me, Thanksgiving weekend, with all the games and all that's going to, you know, the drama that plays out, is one of the best weekends of the year. And, Mike, the college football season's almost over, but we got championship weekend this weekend. And as a matter of fact, just to give you a heads up, Mike and I will be at Twin Peaks on Friday in Buckhead. Saturday, we're doing about an hour show leading into the college football show that will get you ready for the SEC championship down at Stats on Saturday from about noon to 1. But if you want to hang out and watch some of the games or just come by, we'd love to get a chance to see you on Saturday if you don't make it by Twin Peaks on Friday. But this week, lots of conversation, guys, about what's going to happen Saturday at Mercedes-Benz.
Right. I was over at Bobby Dodd on Saturday, I should say, for that noon start. And a game that, you know, kind of like first half, a typical rivalry game, Georgia Tech doing their best to hang in there. And then eventually, you know, Georgia, despite some kind of screwy strategy at the halftime, not maybe maximizing the clock, they got into gear, and then the depth kicked in, the big box car ran over the little box car, and then Jake started connecting with some of his receivers. But, yeah, even that game, you know, that should, for the most part, have been pretty easy. Let's get in, get out. You get this whole George Pickens thing that we'll dive into. I know you got strong opinions on what went down there. And then, of course, about as crazy a game, other than maybe the kick six, and we were all glued to our TVs. I couldn't believe it. Every minute, there was just something to let you go, whoa, watching that Bama and Auburn matchup in the Iron Bowl.
It was amazing. And unfortunately for me, I know most of you are watching it live. I was calling the College Park Skyhawks game, and I didn't get a chance to see it live, but I'm seeing the score updates. And there's nothing worse when you're involved with something and you're seeing this amazing game play out and you can't watch it. So I had it on DVR, and it's immediately, you know, when I got home, I got a chance to check it out. And you're right, Mike. It took you back to the kick six game. It was exciting. It had all the elements. Nobody expected it to be as high scoring as it was because Auburn's defense had been good all year. And then for them to score on Alabama as much as they did really exposed Bama's defense, as we had talked about. It's not as good as it's been in years past. It's the worst since, you know, Saban's been there. You're going back to 07, 08, or whatever it's been. And you saw that on Saturday with Auburn, especially offensively, doing the things they were able to do.
And that's the thing about the Auburn-Alabama game. Yes, Nick Saban certainly had a right to be hopping mad before that last final field goal before the half that Auburn never should have gotten the opportunity to kick. The SEC officials completely screwed that up. But then, of course, being Saban, I always get a kick when he throws these disingenuous comments out. He is, remember, him and Belichick are buds. They're always looking for an edge. You know, he throws shade on the fast-paced offense and all that. Then he goes and gets one himself. Then the idea that somehow there was something wrong or unfair about Gus Malzahn and Auburn coming up with an ingenious plan to confuse Alabama by having the punter out wide. Hey, that's just gamesmanship, man. I mean, you got schooled. End of story. So, you know, Saban kind of goes, I thought that you should just shut his pie hole on the end of that one. But other than the coaching comments, what a classic. Unbelievable stuff.
It really was. And we're going to get into that. Ohio State beats Michigan again, which was not surprising. But a lot of people now are talking about maybe Harbaugh making the exit and where he might end up if
not
he's not going to stay in
not
Michigan.
Here. Here.
I agree with that. But let's talk about the Dogs, man, because here we find ourselves with a dog team that's 11-1, that's back in the SEC championship, that has been as good as advertised. But yet we're all skeptical. We all are sitting here twiddling our thumbs, wondering, can the Dogs beat LSU? And it's a fair thing, Mike, to be thinking about because you've seen how dominant LSU has been all year. There's been no doubt in anybody's mind how good their offense has been. And it reminds me of the year the Dogs went and played in the Rose Bowl and beat Oklahoma and played for the national championship. That year, and I said it, I went to about five games that year, there was something special about the offense and the way it clicked, and that's Sony Michel and Nick Chubb, and obviously it was Jake Fromm in his freshman year. But you don't feel that way about this Dog offense. You don't feel that thing that you felt a few years ago. And, Mike, I'm not telling you the Dogs can't win the SEC championship, but I will tell you today, and I'll tell you the rest of the week, I am doubtful about their opportunities because of what I've seen on the offensive side.
Look, you saw Joe Burrow and LSU handle Texas A&M at home. Now, granted, different conditions, and as we all know, the built-in excuse for Georgia, well, it was raining. So apparently the elements are never a part of college football for Georgia. And I'm being tongue-in-cheek. Look, we all want to see Georgia succeed. I'm so sick and tired of saying anything about Georgia and people lose their minds. But, guys, unless you're not watching the same football we're watching, Jake's got to be better. The only throw Carl he can make consistently is that back shoulder throw. You know, unless the player is wide open, he has difficulty now hitting guys. And this is things that he was doing earlier in his career, so it's kind of weird why he's regressing. I don't like Coley's play calling. You know, he got too cute. They go three throws in a row to start the game against Georgia. Just run the ball. Run the ball. Eat some clock. Make that game as quick as possible. So Coley was screwing around with that. Let's hope that, A, we don't have any more turnovers if you're a Georgia fan, but B, DeAndre Swift has got to be a healthy, and now it doesn't look like he'll be 100%. Kirby said he'll be fine, and we'll get more and more information, as much as they'll be forthcoming out of Athens, but that was a little unsettling. One was just football helmet right on football. That's going to happen. But a guy, you don't need, you know, fumbling. We don't need that nonsense starting up.
I agree. And you know, I'm not going to dismiss the guys that play running back at Georgia. It is running back you. We know that. Swift is a difference maker, though. And for as much conversation we had about Zeus this year, you ready to throw him into that mix? I need DeAndre Swift on Saturday, period. Herrien has been, you know, doing the job. I get it. Swift does things that no one else right now can do for the Dogs, and maybe Zeus turns into that guy over the next season or so. But right now, Mike, he's your most experienced back who's been the best back arguably in the SEC all year. And now you're telling him he might not be ready for Saturday? That's a big problem. Here's the other issue I have, guys, and we'd love to hear from you. It is a Falcon Monday, despite the fact that our team played on Thursday. But coming off of the weekend, Falcon Monday is brought to you by our friends at Xfinity. Beyond Wi-Fi, it is X-Fi Xfinity. Get the speed and coverage and control you need with Xfinity. Here's the thing. Now we're going to blame it on the wide receivers? I'm not talking about the Pickens thing. We're talking about that separately. Now we're going to blame it on the Dogs not having the appropriate wide receiving play? Now you're going to tell me that, well, he's not connecting from because, well, these guys are not good enough? Hasn't Kirby gotten three straight top five classes in the last 3 years? And now you're telling me the quarterback play because it's lacking just a little something. And if you don't believe me, guys, 9 of his first 13 passes were incomplete against Georgia Tech, which is the worst defense he's seen all year. You can't make excuses for what Georgia has going into an SEC championship game. And now all of a sudden, Mike, well, his receivers aren't that good. What?
And we've talked about this before because of, you know, first it was Eason. And it was funny because Georgia fans, you go back and we could go pull some of the comments from social media and everything else. You had Eason, baby. Wakey, wakey, Jakey, eggs and bakey. Mark, Rick, doing everything he can to make sure Eason comes to Georgia. And obviously, Rick's gone, and then Eason's out with the bathwater. Then it's all prom time, prom time. Then you had Fields. And look, whatever went down, whatever didn't happen in those meeting rooms, whatever Kirby didn't see or Coley and Chaney didn't see, all I know is Fields is throwing lasers against Michigan. He's throwing balls. I mean, he's making plays. He's playing hurt. Comes off the knee injury. Looks like he's going to be walking off the field and staying off the field. He battles back. And I don't want to make this about Fromm versus Fields, but it's kind of hard not to. And by the way, Jake Fromm, and we say this on the show, you don't treat college players, you don't treat student-athletes, Carl, like you would pros. You know, it's a these guys aren't getting paid yet, so you're going to give these guys a little more leeway. We're just saying Fromm's got to be better. Everyone loves Jake, natural leader, all the things that have come with it. You got his own teammates going, what the blank are you doing? Okay. Okay, you had DeAndre Swift doing it. You know, you had, I think, Harrion was getting into one of the, with the coaching staff. Very strange vibe, and I'll talk about it more in the dog report, what I saw, because I was sitting right behind the Georgia bench as this game was going down.
And how was the vibe, by the way?
Again, it was all, I was sitting at the second level at Bobby Dodd, all Georgia fans. Needless to say, it was about 60-40 Georgia, but to be expected. And a nice job by Georgia Tech to stay competitive. It was a chippy game, as you'd expect, and all the rivalry games had stuff going on. But, yeah, man, the Dogs, just curious to watch this and like, okay, this is supposed to be the biggest offensive line, the best offensive line in college. Not seeing it, not seeing the consistency. But, guys, the caveat Carl and I have laid out the last 3 weeks, yes, you can beat LSU. The defense has got to play lights out. You got to get Burrow rattled and off the spot. But Burrow's played all these great defenses. It's not like Georgia. Well, wait till he gets a load of Georgia. I know Georgia's great and they rotate guys in, but Burrow's been taking on comers and handling it.
He has been. And you know, I know Fromm has the experience in these kinds of games, which I don't know if you want to, you know, if you want to go down the list of check marks. All right, experience Fromm. Burrow's been the best quarterback in college football all season, period. So this is going to be the Dogs' biggest challenge, and I just tweeted it out, and I'll probably continue to tweet it because it comes down to one thing for me. Saturday is going to be about one thing, and something's got to give. LSU has the best offense that the Dogs have seen all season. They're averaging 48.7 points a game. The Dogs are giving up 10.7. Matter of fact, Mike, the Dogs allowed 125 points this year. That's the fewest in a 12-game season in school history. So even if we don't think the Dogs' defense is great, they're playing great, and something's got to give. The Dogs either show up and shut Joe Burrow and company down, gives their offense a chance to be in this game, maybe it's closer than we think, and the Dogs win, or Joe Burrow does what he's done all season, including Alabama, and they score 40, right. And that's a problem.
Now, I know the common opponent, you're looking for something you can hang your hat on. Look what Auburn did against LSU. They limited them the way that Auburn limited Georgia. So can Georgia's defense do the same thing that Auburn did? Yes, they can. Can you run the football effectively on LSU and maybe take a page, Carl? Remember the famous Giants playbook against the Bills? Bills had that dynamic offense, and the Giants had 41 minutes of possession. If Georgia can run the football and keep Burrow off the field, there are certainly numerous recipes for victory for the Dogs on Saturday. Number one starts with Jake Fromm playing better football.
More to come, guys. Dogs, Tigers, SEC Championship Saturday. It's Dukes and Bell on a Falcon Monday. We do have a coaches show today. Coming up at 6 o'clock, you hear Dan Quinn. The player segment, as Mike mentioned in the crossover with the midday guys, is Debo. It is Deion Jones. You'll get a chance to hear what he has to say between 6 and 7, along with Coach Quinn, with Dave Archer, analyst for our Atlanta Falcons. We're coming back. We got some headlines to get to. Oh, something a coach should never do. We'll explain next. It is Dukes and Bell. It is a Falcon Monday here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Mike and I here in the studio, high above Peachtree. And news just broke about Chris Peterson, who was the head football coach at Washington. Now, for Dog fans, remember Jacob Eason, all right, transfers to Washington. That's where he was from originally, but he comes and obviously, you know how that played out with Jake Fromm, but he goes back there, and one of the reasons was obviously he wanted to get closer to home, but Chris Peterson, who is one of the most accomplished coaches in college football, Mike, a couple of different reports. One, everybody's going, what happened? What's going on? Why would he step down? He's got a good program. He's got Eason coming back next year, blah, blah, blah. Reports are that he just needs some time off. He just needs to recharge?
Yeah, 55 years of age, and a couple of tweets out there. Was it Thamel from New York Times who covers college football saying that, speaking to some people close to Chris Peterson, to Carl's point, it's not an illness. It's not a family illness. His son does have a medical condition that has required a lot of attention over the years. That's part of the reason why he was so hesitant to leave Boise State back in the day. But Jimmy Lake, the D.C., is apparently one of young up-and-coming coaches. So whether it's kind of like the way I guess you could argue that Stoops set up Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, you're kind of doing this, although that was preseason. This is at the end of the season. But either way, Chris Peterson's only 55, so maybe he takes a break. Carl and I were just talking amongst ourselves. He's kind of enigmatic. You never really seen a lot of extent. I mean, I've seen one feature on him in College Game Day back in the day, but he's not a guy that you see doing a lot of stuff. So I don't know if TV's in his future in the short term, but he'll probably land somewhere else. 55 for a guy of his talents. He's not going to retire. He'll be back.
Yeah, I agree. It is one of the better jobs, one of the great settings in college football. But I think, you know, this is, again, when we say what jobs are going to open up and who's going to end up where. Listen, Florida State's looking for a coach, right? They still have not made a decision, and I don't think that's going to happen anytime between now and, you know, it should, because the early signing period is here, and you need to know where your program's going. But I think, Mike, you know, the old coach and waiting thing, this is the way you do it. And you don't screw your school or your coaches, your assistant coaches, by, you know, doing this, preferably at the beginning of the season. Lincoln Riley was in place, but at the end of the year, it gives everybody an opportunity to say, hey, we've got a plan, and look, kids, this is what we're doing. And everybody that's committed to Washington, that they're not going away from what they're already doing, and so I think this helps their coaching staff. The other way, the bad way to do this, by the way, is after the signing period, and then you decide to step away, and everything's in turmoil, and that's when kids want out because the head coach has changed. So we'll see where it goes with Washington, but interesting news there coming out of Washington State, that is.
And we'll talk more about the other coaching moves as Ole Miss fires their head coach, which has some Ole Miss fans rather upset. The way that Egg Bowl went down, it was kind of embarrassing for the Rebs. Also, Boston College moving on from their coach. Your boy Tom Herman at Texas firing his. It's kind of like first step, right? Stepping out on the thin ice now, brother.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you have not lived up to the expectations of any season, you got to make change, and I think – you know, the alums and certainly the people who are watching over that program, the AD, a guy named Del Conte, Chris Del Conte, just got an extension. He needs to see better results in 7 wins for Texas. And so I think this was one of the things coming from him saying, you got to make some changes. We'll see. The college football season, man, it's about to get crazy, guys. And we say this every year. Jobs are going to, you know, open up that we didn't expect, like today with Washington. There'll be other jobs that open up. We'll talk more about this in our dog report. Ole Miss fires their coach.
Yeah.
That one doesn't make sense to me, Mike. And I think, you know, the incident with the young man who, you know, used a urination celebration,
they
didn't help him.
For those who didn't see the Egg Bowl, it's a tying touchdown pending the extra point. And of course, he does this. The one time he does it, Carl, he had never seen it before. He does the leg up in the air, as you said, as a dog peeing celebration. They fire Matt Luke. Again, Matt Luke's in no man's land. You got the NCAA sanctions. You got to pick up and clean up Hugh Freeze's mess. He's doing a nice job, as best you can be expected with a bowl band, recruiting some good talent. So I think, you know, this is kind of short-sighted. See it through. Give him one more year. See some of these guys, you know, once you can actually do something and even get more kids to come to your program. Tough spot.
It really is. It's Dukes and Bell. Hey, coming up, we are going to talk more about the Iron Bowl and how that all played out. And is this the demise, the start of Alabama not being as great as they've been? We'll get into that. Jahi behind the glass today. Bo Morgan producing the show. Let's hit some headlines.
Strap in, youngins. Hitting the headlines with Dukes and Bell.
By the way, I did proclaim on Twitter, Carl, it's Cyber Monday. All Dukes and Bell hot takes are 50% off. Dukes to Alabama fans. End of Tide's run.
You've been in the college football playoff for the last 5 years. Now you're out. Tua's gone. Mac Jones just showed you what he could do or what he couldn't do. You've lost coach after coach after coach. At some point, I hate to tell you guys this, it comes to an end, okay? Nothing lasts forever, and it's been a hell of a run.
Hey, by the way, you better watch out, because somebody like Harvey Updike's going to find where you live, and he's going to kill your bushes.
It's been a hell of a run, but this thing is on the way down, Mike
watch
Bell.
Out. There's going to be an A. There's going to be the A with the mullet on it on your front lawn. Someone's going to burn your zoysia.
It's on the way down. Hey, let's talk about what coaches shouldn't do, and then we'll get to hearing from Kirby Smart about the win over Georgia Tech, but also looking ahead to the SEC. One of the biggest things that you shouldn't do is poke the bear. But one of the bigger things you shouldn't do is be a head football coach in the NFL and wear a shirt that basically criticizes and, more importantly, shows what an idiot you are for putting the shirt on, despite the fact that your daughter got it for you.
You're taking a shot at one of your arch rivals.
That's one of those shirts you go, oh, honey, that's sweet. Put that in the closet. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Freddie Kitchens, all right, takes his family to the movies in Cleveland. Guy sees him, says, Coach, I need a picture. and he's got a shirt on that says, Pittsburgh started it. And it's the worst look for a head coach who's completely on the brink of being fired right now in his first season, Mike, who, let's be honest, hasn't been able to get this team to perform up to the level that we thought. He's got all this talent, and now you see Freddie Kitchens doesn't really have control, let alone what kind of message does this send?
Well, after the Hugh Jackson thing and being on Hard Knocks kind of showed some of the weak points, there were many in that coaching staff. I think it was kind of a feel-good story. Now, again, that was a great success story by Cleveland standards last season, but to be kind of prisoner of the moment where you go with a guy, then maybe you just keep that guy as the OC and you still bring in a head coach to run the whole thing, because there's guys who just aren't ready for these jobs in college and pro, and this is one of those guys. So Steelers grind out a win at home. Steeler players say Coach Tom would never do something like that because he respects other teams, and he gets it. Tomlin, of course, thinks Kitchens is a clown. Won't even basically – he basically give a dismissive kind of like, ha, you know, or like roll his eyes when asked about Cleveland, taking, for the most part, the high road. Yeah, I just – to me, it's just another example of Cleveland's soap opera. They can't get out of their own way, you know. Arguably their biggest win in a couple of years against the Steelers overshadowed by the Myles Garrett thing.
Yep.
And then the coach – that's something you want to put to rest, and he's just perpetuating the nonsense.
It really is. More on that coming up in our NFL Blitz segment on the way. It is Dukes and Bell. It's our headline segment, guys. Falcons are practicing today, by the way. Now they played Thursday. We know the outcome of that game. But they're back on the field today. Mike and I were just saying – maybe they go beat Carolina on Sunday, because Carolina loses if you missed it yesterday.
Yeah, Carolina is not good. And I'll tell you this right now. I think Ron Rivera is dead man walking. I think last year they had a seven games, right? Both losing streak for Carolina.
Dead man walking!
You had a new owner that was probably hesitant because it's his first year in the big chair to make that kind of a move. They've got some considerations now. And do you want Ron Rivera even in that conversation about what you do with Cam Newton? I mean, Carolina guys... Here we go again. Four in a row they've lost. At one point they were in the wild card. Now they're 5-7. We could very easily do what we did to them in Charlotte on Sunday. Doesn't really help us. And by the way, in case you're wondering for the Chase Young sweepstakes, the Giants are going to take Chase Young. So you got to get to the second spot or the third spot and come with a house full of picks if you're going to. And you have to mortgage a big chunk of your future to get Chase. So yes, we've already won three. Pray the Giants and other teams win more if you do want to play that card.
Yeah, I mean. Listen, if it was you or I get it. We go, well, why don't we just play for a draft status? That's not how it works. And if you're Dan Quinn, you want to lose the next four? If you think you have a shot at coming back?
Yeah, but there's still no guarantee that Dan and Thomas will be back. You know, there's still that whole thing to play out. What direction is Arthur Blank? What exactly did Arthur evaluate in these last few weeks? And if so, what's he going to do?
It's going to be interesting. Carolina's up next. By the way, we'll get you caught up on the latest with the Falcons. Chris Lindstrom injury. What's going on with the Falcons possibly signing a tight end? All of that is on the way. Let's hear from Kirby Smart, Mike. He talks about the SEC championship. He says this is the best environment in football.
The SEC championship is the greatest environment maybe in all of football, okay? Because you can say the Super Bowl and you can say all this, but there is no greater passion for a game than any place in the country when you talk about LSU and the University of Georgia. Doesn't matter who's playing in the SEC championship.
I agree. I think it's going to be electric Saturday. Listen, the Dogs have been fortunate to be in this game the last few years. You know how big it is. If they win, obviously they're going to the college football playoff, which is the ultimate goal, and then you got a shot at a national championship. But I agree with Kirby. The issue is you're playing arguably the best team and has been the best team all season long in LSU.
Right. Joe Burrow. And you see he wore the Burrow jersey with the R-E-A-U-X. Been a little tribute to the LSU fans out there in the Cajun twist in Louisiana. But goes on and obviously handles Texas A&M pretty soundly. Earlier today in Athens, a word from our buddy Seth Emerson that George Pickens apologized to his Bulldog teammates for his ejection and being suspended for the first half of the SEC championship for the fight with Swilling's kid that Swilling initiated. But you got to be honest with us. Pickens kind of took it to a dark place by trying to spin the dude into the wall. I had guys coming at me on Twitter. Well, at least he was wearing a helmet. Yes, sir. You still don't. You know, you got to be smarter. You know, Georgia Tech's season was over in October. You've got some bigger fish to fry if you're Georgia. We all know about the heat of the moment. But Pickens, for what it's worth, guys, apologizing to his teammates.
All right. They're going to need him. I mean, there's no doubt about it. They're going to need him. Hawks and Trae Young take on the Warriors tonight. Hawks got to snap this losing streak. It's 10 straight. It's a tough road trip. Trae has been great. We're going to talk more about this as well along the way, but no Draymond Green tonight. The Warriors, you know, they've been decimated by injuries. This is not the Warriors team of a few years ago that was must-see TV. So, you know, you're hoping tonight that the Hawks can find a way to get a win. You'll be able to listen to it right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, our hopes were that, you know, we're going to see the Hawks take a leap that maybe sniff for the 8th seed. Quite honestly, this could be two teams in the top 5 picks in the NBA draft lottery, to be honest with you.
Pre-game 7, tip is at 7:30, and the Hawks with the Nets coming up on Wednesday at State Farm Arena. It's Peachtree Night, guys. Southern rapper Big Crit will be performing during halftime. Get your Peachtree Night tickets today at Hawks.com/Peachtree. We're coming back. I think they're on the downslide. We'll explain. It is Dukes and Bell. Glad to have you listening on a Falcon Monday here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Falcons back on the field, as we mentioned, and we'll get you caught up on all the things going on with them as some guys coming off the injuries. Mike and I were just talking about this real quick, and we'll get more into this as the day goes on. Falcon Report at 5 o'clock. But if you're Dan Quinn, right, based on where we are, we've been eliminated from the playoffs. You've got Carolina, San Francisco. You saw a great game yesterday between San Francisco and the Ravens, which we'll talk about as well. Jacksonville, and then at Tampa. If you're Dan Quinn, and here's what you have to weigh. One is, if I still have a chance to be here, which I think Dan Quinn wants to be here, okay? I know some of you think he wants to be. He wants to be here. He wants to prove that what you saw this year is not what he wanted to do and not what the team he thought we could be. So the best way to do that is to come back and prove it next year, right? He wants to be here. The way you do that is you went out. Right, you go out in these last four games, you show out, Mike, and I know it sounds crazy, and trust me, I'm not saying they're going to do it, because right now I've completely lost faith as far as what team's going to show up. We said this up and down season. But if you're Dan Quinn, that's what you want. The other part of it is, if you're Dan Quinn and you think you're going to be fired at the end of the season, you also want to go out and win out, because it shows that, you know what, even when a season or in a season where your team was down and out and you were out of the playoffs, Mike, at the you know, beginning of December, your teams went out and competed. And if you want another head coaching job, that's what you're going to be selling to the next owner, especially in the National Football League.
Well, just, again, not to write Dan's resume for him, but you and I were talking about this off the air. I mean, he took over a defense. It was so bad, he had to relinquish control of that defense. So what NFL team's going to say, you're my new defensive coordinator? You know, I mean, if you're going to want to work in the NFL, a lot of people, and I've seen it already written by people, I think Bradley might have written this a few months back, that maybe Dan Quinn going to the college ranks as a head coach, because you can use some of the motivational stuff, which I'm not saying the brotherhood thing is worn thin. Every player that we spoke to a man, Carl, said that they wanted to win for Dan Quinn. They love Dan Quinn. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the Dan Quinn-Dimitroff partnership with personnel, and that's where the other part of this conversation, Carl, goes to. We had a couple guys ask us today about our defensive line. Jarvis and I were going and talking on Twitter, and Jarvis works with John Chuckery at night. For instance, Deidre Sinat, third-round pick, not even dressing. Not even dressing, Carl, for these games. So, I mean, you don't just throw away third-round picks. We've had a second-round pick, you know, that it's gone awry. We've had a lot of picks kind of leave you scratching your head. We're still waiting to see Tack become a force in this league. Not happening. I know he's drawing doubles and he's helping out the guys, but he's not giving you the production you need. So, you know, that all is not what's cracked up to be, let alone the offensive line, which we've invested, which is a shambles. So, to me, you take Dan Carl at the totality of it, from his management experience with Thomas and personnel to the in-game and on-game, I should say, on-field coaching.
Yeah, you cannot look at one game. You certainly can't look at the first three or four games. You've got to look at his entire tenure here. Now, that also includes a Super Bowl run. But then you start to evaluate it, and I've said this at the beginning of the season. Shanahan left, we had the number one offense, and we had mid-20 defenses outside of some statistical categories. And that has still remained to be true. And this year, we're going to be one of the worst defenses in the league.
And under 500 since the Super Bowl.
So, I mean, if you look at that, that's something else that could be, you know, looked at differently. Either way, my point is, if you're Dan Quinn, you want to win. And that's why it's not going to be, oh, we're just going to go lay an egg for the next 4 weeks because we want a draft pick. He is actually playing for his livelihood, to be honest. And that's important, Mike. And, you know, whether he's here or not, he's thinking about what is next for him.
Right. And two coaches that are probably going to have a good chance of both getting got with Ron Rivera going versus Dan Quinn. The 4-game losing streak for Carolina, I mentioned last break, Carl, the 7-game losing streak, David Tepper, an owner who might be looking at this going, I've seen enough of Ron Rivera. And again, Ron Rivera took his team to a Super Bowl and lost, and it's been diminishing returns since. Cam Newton, a huge question mark. You've got McCaffrey before you run the guy's legs off. So, you know, you've got to sit there and figure out what you got. A Luke Kuechly who's one concussion away from being done, and you see what they're doing to McCaffrey. So that's not exactly a rosy scenario for Carolina.
More on this, guys. Falcon Report is on the way. It is Dukes and Bell. It's a Falcon Monday brought to you by Xfinity. This is X-Fi, only from Xfinity. Get the speed and coverage control you need. To say that Nick Saban's reign is over because they're not going to participate in the college football playoff this year may not be the thing that you think is true. But this is what's true. Alabama's vulnerable. And for the first time in a very long time, you see it. For the first time, this wasn't a dominant Alabama defense. And I know they're young, but, you know, all the quarterback experience that was just there a few years ago is gone. Jalen Hurts might be playing for a national championship in January. Tua's hurt. Mac Jones is good, not great. You start talking about, well, they're still putting guys in the NFL. And as long as Nick Saban's there, they will. And he'll continue to recruit well. But, Mike, there's something that has been lost with Alabama. And we said it all season long that they're living off the reputation of what they were. 08, 09, 2010, 2011, 2012. They were great. Kirby was there. They were great. This is not that Alabama right now. And not saying that they can't get back there, but I'm willing to tell you that they have peaked. They've won a bunch of championships. They've had a hell of a run. But at this point, and you got to hear what Nick Saban had to say, because when Saban loses games, you ever notice he always starts complaining about things? Things that all of a sudden matter that really don't. And to be honest with you, at the end of that game, Gus Malzahn outcoached Nick Saban. I'm going to throw a formation at you, and what do we always say about Saban? He's so prepared. He's so well. He's this. He watches film. And they get a penalty. It cost them the game. That's coaching.
Yeah, he's expected that because they put the punter out there out wide that you're supposed to get a timeout from the official for you to get the subs in you want. That's not the way it works. You know, and that's the thing. Look. Passionate fans when it comes to college, sometimes common sense and just looking at it from outside the situation. Nobody does that. You're a Bama fan. We say anything bad about Bama, we get guys going bananas. But you cannot lose assistant after assistant, recruiter after recruiter, year after year, and expect the same team to be on the football field. You know, whether it was Locksley and some of the guys that he helped bring, both offense and defense, by the way, great recruiter going to Maryland. You know, you got guys that on defense that just don't fit the mold of Saban. Saban's defensive play smart. Their corners are generally really, really good. He's always coaching. He works with the DBs in practice. You're seeing blown coverages. You're seeing guys getting open against all the teams they play. They're giving up more points to the mediocre teams in the SEC West this year, things you hadn't seen in the past.
Here's Nick Saban on that last play where they get basically a penalty that costs them the game.
Pretty unfair play at the end of the game. They substituted a punter as a wide receiver. So we put the punt team in, and then when the quarterback was still in there, we tried to put the defense back in. I thought they should have given us a little more time to substitute and get Waddle out as a returner. We get called for 12 guys on the field. So that was very disappointing. We're responsible for that as coaches, but it was a very unusual circumstance, to say the least.
Okay, that's passive-aggressive right there.
Very much so.
I mean, look, you weren't ready for it. Yep. How about tipping your cap? You know what? I hate to say it in this game. Coach Malzahn at Auburn, they threw something at us we weren't prepared for. End of story.
That's it. But, see, we're so used to living off a reputation. He's prepared for everything. Nick Saban, oh, man, his kids are so prepared. How many years have we said that? And you saw it on Saturday. So you add all of that stuff up, and you start to realize that, wait a minute, Clemson has won two of the last three championships. Clemson has scored 30 or more on a Saban defense that was supposed to be impenetrable. And you start to realize that teams are understanding how to beat Alabama, and teams like Clemson, okay, and Ohio State, they're built to beat them. That's why I'm telling you this thing where Alabama was dominating everybody, I don't think that's going to be the case, Mike. Moving forward, I just don't think that's going to be the case.
Well, again, LSU's got to go out and find another dynamic quarterback, and I know they've got a couple guys in the pipeline, but Joe Burrow, remember, this guy could have started for Ohio State. They finally got the transformative player. LSU has always had the athletes that could match up. You could argue their coaches could never match Saban and strategy and all the things we just talked about that used to. And again, Alabama's not going to fall off the face of the earth, guys, but there are some things that Saban's going to have to address. And Carl just laid it out. But that is vintage Saban. He does make those little comments when things aren't going well. We joked around about it. When Gus Malzahn and other teams start going to a spread formation and up-tempo, I'm worried about player safety. We're rushing. That's a lot of plays for those kids. You're so full of crap. You're doing the same thing. As soon as you get those guys in your, you know, on scholarship, you're doing the same thing.
They're throwing the ball more than they ever have.
But that's the thing. No Alabama fan. I don't want to speak down to Alabama fans, Carl, but they're not picking up on these nuances. Now, if you're a Bama fan, you're upset about how the refs stopped the clock, gave gave Alabama Auburn the time to kick the field goal. Now, that was a legitimate excuse. And I thought Saban was going to have a heart attack right there before the half. That never should have happened.
Hey, coach, go find a field goal kicker. Go find a field goal kicker. Stop failing your fans.
It'll be a 30-yard field goal to tie it for Alabama's Joseph Bulovas. This kick is on the way. It is up. And it hits the upright. Oh, my God. It hits the left upright.
NFL Blitz is next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.